Okay, this is David Klein for the Southern Oral History Program, and I'm in Louisville, Kentucky on Tuesday, June the 6th, 2006, with Mr. Earl Hartledge. And we're sitting at your kitchen table right now on a family farm. Mm-hmm. That and this is the house in which you were born and raised, is that right?
Correct.
And can you tell me just a little bit about your family and how they came to farm here?
My family, here's the picture of my great-grandfather. Now, my grandfather was William, and this is his parents, and these were their children, Elizabeth's and Joseph's, and they lived right here across the field, here in this house. Mm-hmm. And this house was built right after we had a tornado come through here. And let me be accurate on this. In 1890, and it blew the house down, not this house, but it blew their house down. And Carrie, mm-hmm. right here, who was born in March the 8th of 1890, was a baby, and it blew her out in the pasture. And the house was gone. After the tornado went through, they found her out there, and she was all right. And then in 2006, we had another tornado come through here, and it blew the barn down, which was 100 years old, on this same property. And that was just this past January of this year. And they had Elizabeth and Joseph, who were born in 1847 and 1843, respectively, had 14 children. And one of those was my grandfather, William, who was born in 1879 and died in 1968.
So you're the fourth generation to farm here, then?
Yes. Yes, that's right. Correct.
And what do you farm?
We were truck gardeners. Mm-hmm. I primarily now, I'm a contractor, but I still farm here on the same place that Dad and Grandpa did, and then they were raised right on the adjoining farm.
Right.
This was German ancestry. Mm-hmm. Hartledge, mm-hmm. Hartlage. They would be the German thing. And the biggest part of the people in this area was of German ancestry. Mm-hmm. And I can give you some of those names, and probably will through.
Okay.
As we go through.
What was this area originally called?
Well, it was Beantown. Mm. Back then, because it was small truck gardens, one right after the other. Now, am I too loud?
No, you're fine. Just checking.
Truck garden. Do you know what a truck garden is?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. So you don't need it on there.
No, you can tell me.
Truck
about
garden
it.
Would be is vegetables, and the farmers would raise those and put them on their truck and go to the city and sell them. Mm-hmm. And that would be from tomatoes to potatoes and beans, and that's it was Bean Town.
Right.
At one time, before the defense plants came in, in the 40s.
So from Bean Town to Rubber Town.
Bean Town to Rubber Town.
Mm-hmm. And so the defense plants really built up in this area around the war, preparing for the war,
yes.
Second World War.
Yes.
And just transformed, I guess, this area. This.
Yes, to a certain extent, they did. They came here. The federal government brought them that here, in conjunction with B.F. Goodrich, E.I. DuPont de Nemours and Company, National Carbide Corporation, and Kentucky Synthetic Rubber Corporation. And they made synthetic rubber. The government was worried about the rubber for our tires, for our vehicles, if our supply got cut off during that war. And so they did that, and the government invested in the early 40s, $92.4 million in these plants. The peak wartime production yield was 195,000 tons of synthetic rubber, with more than 4,000 people employed there.
Mm-hmm. Now, has your family ever, members of your family ever worked for any of
this industry? Some, yes, worked here. Sorry, take it if you need it.
No, it should have been off. It was a big no-no.
They were good jobs here. Probably the best of the jobs were, when it was built, when the government built this, people worked around the clock. They would just stay in there 24 hours a day, and they'd get paid. They got tired, they'd lay down and sleep. Mm-hmm. But it was really a push by the government to get this built and in production. Now, do you want to stay on that, or do you want to go to Lake Dreamland?
Well, tell me about Lake Dreamland, because we're looking right now at a card.
Postcard.
A postcard that says, have your country home at Lake Dreamland. And this is your uncle or great-uncle?
Great-uncle.
Great-uncle is listed. For further information, see Edward Hartledge at Lake Dreamland. So, and this is just by here, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And this is a place where people had basically summer camps.
He would lease you a lot for 99 years to build a summer camp on. And this card is a promotional card for that, and it says, 2 miles beyond defense plant on river. Mm-hmm. So at that point in time, it was known as the defense plant. The telephone number was SH2165M. That was Shawnee, is what the SH stood for. And Uncle Ed, everyone called him Uncle Ed, whether they were related to him or not. This was his farm, and he was pretty progressive. He had some other property around it, St. Denis, which was a community on Cane Run Road.
So what is now Lake Dreamland, he originally owned all that land?
He owned all of that. Okay. Uncle Ed owned all of that. That was his farm. And after when he died...
That was his farm.
I don't know for sure when he died. Now, he was born in 1888, so it wasn't dead when this picture was made here. So that was in the 70s, I think. Mm-hmm. Probably 80s. Mm-hmm. Probably 80s.
So you really grew up and have been around these plants your whole life, right? And
whole life.
What has it been like being a neighbor to these?
It hasn't been too bad. It's in the old days, there was a lot more pollution than there is now. You could wake up if the wind was coming this way, you'd have a white film on everything outside.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of that, but now right here, primarily, the winds come from the southwest, and so we right immediately in that direction we have the Ohio River and southern Indiana, and so which is not very developed,
mm-hmm.
and so we had pretty clean air here,
mm-hmm.
right here where I live. Because most of the bad stuff would go in toward western Louisville,
mm-hmm.
because of the southwest prevailing winds.
Right. But when if the wind shifted, or you'd smell it, or
we'd have that. Right. And the smell, yes, there was smell, a lot more smell than there is today.
Mm. Was it ever a concern for growing vegetables out here?
Yes. Immediately next to us here, to the south and west, there was a plant that came in there called Stauffer Chemical Company. And right now, that plant is abandoned, and they have tore it down. But they bought some land here, and then they had to buy some more because they were having leaks there and killing crops of some of my neighbors and some of the relatives, like Tubby Hartley's was right down the road from me here on Bramer's Lane, and they had to buy him. And
this is contaminants to the soil itself.
It was not so much a contaminant, but it was a gas leak and chlorine leaks, and it would just come across and kill the crops. And like in 1961, there was some gas floated over to Lake Greenland, and from the farmer Stauffer Chemical Company, and there was evacuation of 1,000 residents.
Mm-hmm. That would have been a chlorine leak.
Right. Chlorine.
Right.
Mostly.
So there were buyouts then of some farms.
And then they had to buy out because you just couldn't. You'd plant a crop and we were selling to A&P, that was the Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company.
Mm-hmm.
Then some of our neighbors were selling to Kroger then, and we got to sell into them later. And you'd plant for them, and whatever we could grow, well, they would buy because they knew it was going to be good and put up nicely, so they could. Mm. We'd take it to their warehouse, and then they would take it out to the individual stores and sell them.
Mm-hmm.
And here, we would have at least 10,000 tomato plants, each one of them on a stake.
Mm-hmm.
That we tied up each year, and so it's very, very labor intensive.
Yeah. Do you have other family members that, or siblings that worked with you, or?
Yes, we had in my immediate family there was 7 boys. I had 6 brothers, and we worked on this farm right here that I own now. Their names went down the alphabet. The oldest one was Albert. The next one was Bertrand, Carl, Delphin, Earl, who is me, and I was be the fifth one, and then Floyd and Gerard. After the dad and mom had 3 children and just named them, and someone told them, well, hey, that's ABC. So when the fourth
kept
one
going.
Came along, it was a conscious effort to
right.
continue that. So right. had no sisters. And Dad was in partners with Grandpa, and they knew what to do with us boys.
Mm-hmm.
Work them.
Yeah. Had themselves their own labor gang. Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
That's the best way to give them something to do, and they're not going to be into trouble.
Right. Almost had a baseball team, too.
Yeah. We was did play a bunch of ball.
Yeah.
Here, just amateur ball.
Right. So was this a pretty close knit farming community here then?
Oh yes. Yeah. Yes.
You've mentioned other relatives living around. So.
Yes. Yeah. Real close. And practically all of them of German descent.
Mm-hmm.
And would help one another, and about everyone had some hogs, had the mules that we worked the land with, and cultivated row crop. It was row crops.
Okay, and you are the reason that I got your name is that you've recently joined the Rubbertown.
Oh no!
Or you've been
I was on the original.
Oh, you've been on it for a long time.
Yes.
So can you tell me about how they sought you out and how you came to work with the council?
I've been a county commissioner of Jefferson County, and that at that time there was three county commissioners and the county judge, and that ran the county.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the city of Louisville was 12 aldermen and the mayor, and that was the governing body of the city. And so I served one four-year term as a county commissioner.
Mm-hmm. And when was that?
Prior to that, I was that was in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that, I served a four-year term on the old Jefferson County School Board.
Mm-hmm.
Now we are merged with the Louisville Independent, so it's one school system. Probably because of that, some of that political involvement, I was asked to join and did so gladly.
Mm-hmm.
It's a non-paying job.
Mm-hmm. What got you involved in politics?
I got into ran for the school board first, and I was just I'd look at my tax bills and I'd the biggest part of the money that was going to the schools,
mm-hmm.
school system, and I was an unlikely candidate, I thought, to be running for the public school board because my children went to the parochial system.
Okay. Right.
They did that because I thought it was superior.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought that someone could do a better job there than I could, but I wasn't satisfied with the job that they were doing there, and so I said, well, I'll go there, I'll take a stab mm-hmm. at it and see what I can do.
Mm-hmm.
So I ran and won. Met with quite a bit of resistance because of I didn't choose to use the public school system for my children.
Mm-hmm. But your idea, I imagine, was that you wanted to try and improve it to such a level.
Absolutely. As, right? I wanted to improve it. I wanted mm-hmm. to see where all of this money was going and make
right.
them more accountable.
Right. So what kinds of things were you able to get done while you're on the board? Or what kinds of things you able to get done?
We made quite a few changes. It was Richard Van Hoos was the superintendent mm-hmm. of Jefferson County school system then, and he had been there a long time, and he ruled it with an iron fist.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have any problem with someone with strong management skills, but there's always room for improvement.
Mm-hmm.
That he would, the school board members was pretty much picked and ran until I came along.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a good experience. And then after that, I knew I wanted to run for county commissioner, but I should have ran for re-election to the school board, but that was just going to be, I'd just be there for 1 year, and I decided that that was, wouldn't be fair to my constituency to run for a 4-year term and then leave in a year. And so I didn't do that, and but it would have been very smart politically for me to do that, because I could have been there and took a real active role and got a lot of press, but that wasn't that wasn't in me, and that wasn't my style.
Right. So there's basically a year off then.
So I just set out a year and then ran for the county commissioner seat and won that.
Now that was mid 70s. Was that were you in that seat during the school desegregation order in 75?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I was county commissioner when that order came down from Judge Garden. And I didn't like it. I didn't really, really fight it. However, one time we had was having a meeting of the fiscal court, FISCAL, as it was known, and Judge Garden's name came up, and I called him a soup sandwich. And some of the TV reporters after that, after the meeting, Earl, what's a soup sandwich? And I said, well, you go to the restaurant and order one and see if you can figure it out. That was just some old hometown country talk. And if I called you a soup sandwich, well, that was not a compliment, would not be a compliment. I thought you was pretty messed up.
Right, right.
And but that's what I thought of him, and so that's what I called him.
So you were, it was pretty clear what your feelings
were. Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. He had an opinion, and he made his ruling, and I had an opinion, and I told him what I thought.
I've also interviewed Don Randolph. Who was, I believe, chair of the school board at that time, right?
He was there whenever I was there.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was your introduction to politics through the school board and then county commissioner. And that was at the same time as city-county merger.
Yes.
As well. So that was a major time to be in that position.
Yes.
Lots of change.
And whenever I was on the school board, well, that we had the merger, the Louisville Independent School System went out of business, and the county is the prevailing entity then, and so they took that over. So right. it's a large system here.
Right.
So I don't know for sure what the budget is right now, but it's pretty big.
Right. And I just saw in the paper, was it this morning's paper, that the Supreme Court is going to hear the latest lawsuit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So does it surprise you at all to see this arc of change like that, or?
No, not really. Not really. I have a lot of black friends. Negroes, many of them did not like this order when it came down. I suppose that it was a social experiment, and but when you spend your education dollar on transportation, well, I will question that, and that's. That's what that did, and that was the start of that. And I don't know that it's really improved the quality of the education. I wouldn't go that far to say that. Matter of fact, I think it's pretty sad right now. The teachers profess to have the knowledge, and we are paying for them to impart that, and I don't really think that we're getting our money's worth. Mm-hmm. Teacher tenure, you know what that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't like. As a matter of fact, whenever I was on the school board, I tried to do something about it, and I got it got going pretty good, and the then superintendent Richard Van Hoos got the 14th district PTA president on it, and they really came after me. But there is no one in our society that has anything close to tenure, and I don't think that they should have that. Teachers should have that, have tenure.
Mm-hmm.
We one of the things then we had teachers that wasn't quite right, and would be found out, and the superintendent would it's so hard to fire them once they have tenure.
Right.
And the administration would get them to resign and give them a glowing recommendation so they could get a job in another school system.
Right, just get rid of
it. And I detest that. Mm-hmm. And I said, as soon as I found that out, I wanted to be about changing that. Because
mm-hmm.
we're not, if I tell you somebody's all right, well, they're going to be all right.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not, well, I'm going to say, well, everything I know about them is all right.
Right.
But I don't know them very well. But if I'm going to give you, then this, you can mark that down and take that to the bank. Because
mm-hmm.
that's as close to the old gold as you're going to get.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you serve another term on the school board later on? Then,
no.
So it was that one term, and then one term as county commissioner?
Yes.
Right. And that was the end of your political career?
I haven't sought an office. And my wife came down with cancer whenever I ran for re-election for the county, as a county commissioner, and there was Mitch McConnell, who is presently the U.S. Senator. He was county judge executive. And he had favor with the Courier Journal and Louisville Times, the newspaper at that time, and my wife came down with cancer and had breast cancer, and I just suspended the campaign and
mm-hmm.
said, well, I'm gonna do what I need to do, and let's take care of her. And
mm-hmm.
So wasn't able to campaign as much as I could, and there was a massive effort to came after me, and they got me.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't win the second term.
Right. So the reason we got talking about politics was you said that was part of your background that may have been appealing to the Rubbertown Community Advisory Council.
Yes.
When they were looking for members. And so how long have you served with them now?
I don't know for sure when that was started. Do you know?
I didn't bring my notes on that with me.
But I've been on there for 10 years, I suppose.
I think it's been running about 12 years, if I remember. I think that's what Charlie Hunton told me.
Yeah.
Right.
I was on it originally.
Okay.
And have served ever since.
Had you ever had any relationship or been on any other panels with any of the individual plants? Or
No.
So, and who was it that sought you out and came to you, asked you to serve on that, if you recall?
I don't know for sure who that was.
Okay. That's really not...
The original, whoever, the original... that thing was set up, and I was I got on there, and I shortly after that I told them that A. DuPont, is who was a member, I said, look, they're like General Bull Moose in the old Little Abner character. Whatever's good for General Bull Moose is good for the for the community. And I said, and that's what I think their attitude is. And they did whatever they wanted to do without regard for their neighbors. Now they took care of their employees. The employees there made real, real good money. They paid well. DuPont was very, very liberal with anyone who wanted to run for public office. Any employee there that wanted to run for a public office, well, they encouraged it. They would pay them for any time that they had to spend away from the plant in their duties. But that was some of the genius of the corporation. They would place employees at all levels of government, and then they would know what was going on.
Very interesting. Right.
So nothing could happen without them knowing it.
Right. And but as a neighbor, they were a bit of a bully.
Oh yes, very, very much.
Can you tell me about?
Yeah.
Can you tell me about that? In what ways they were?
They didn't really in the early days. They didn't care what kind of fumes, dust, or what have you that they was putting out on the adjoining community. Now, the people have forced them to be a better corporate citizen. And ultimately, that's going to cost the community too, because DuPont has made an announcement in September 19th of 2002 that they were DuPont Dow Elastomers announced the closing of its Louisville plant and moving the operations to Louisiana. And at that time, they were said that 285 jobs will be lost. Now, it hasn't happened yet, but it's going to happen. It's on schedule, and that whole plant is going to be leveled. It's going to be, they're going to run it right back, put it back to the way it used to be.
Now, are there a number of vacant plants around here, ones that have already closed down or shut over the years?
Stauffer Chemical is the really the it's shut down. It was, they was into the farming, and in the, I guess in the, when the farming, when the economy went down, well, it hurt them pretty badly. And right now here they have a little over 300 acres here. They got 220 acres on the west side of Campground Road and the south side of Bramer's Lane, and they got 80 acres to the east of Campground Road. And that's there's been several mergers, and that's right now it's Aptamix 10 owns it. And it's sitting there vacant. They did put in some German technology there, and they are pumping water out of the ground and treating it and dumping it into the Ohio River, and that is supposed to clean up the land, the contaminated land.
Supposed to.
Supposedly.
Right. Right.
And that runs 24 hours a day. But they had a dump down here close to the river. It was a private dump of theirs, and they just throw anything and everything in there, and And then they, at one time, they...
This is DuPont you're talking about?
Or no, this is Stauffer Chemical.
Stauffer Chemical, yeah.
They capped it off with some soil that they put 1 foot of soil over top of it, and there's supposed to be less water will penetrate that 1 foot of clay soil than would go through a quarter inch of plate steel.
Okay.
So that's capped off, and now immediately downstream from them is the old Lee's Lane landfill,
which I've heard about. Yeah,
and that was the Lee's Lane landfill was. It started out as a borrow pit, and a hole was dug for the sand that was used for backfill and fill in buildings around here, and then you got to be a dump, and you could just go in there and dump anything and everything. And when we had the Superfund, the government set up that Superfund to clean up some of the toxic dumps. Well, the Lee's Lane landfill was the number one contaminated landfill in the nation. And
so it was being used by both the private citizens and by the companies.
The companies, some of these companies here in Rubbertown had to pay some of that cost, and but it was wet garbage, meaning household waste and anything and everything.
Right.
Didn't matter. You could dump it there.
Right.
And so they wasn't policed as they are today.
Right.
Are regulated.
So have you been fairly pleased with the increasing response from the companies?
Oh yeah. It's good. It's a long time coming, and the companies they recognize that they have to be a good corporate citizen, and they want to be good neighbors.
Mm-hmm. Now, we talked about race a little bit earlier, but how does race play out in terms of this area and in terms of relations with the plants? Are there is there a black neighborhood around here? If you could just sort of sketch that out for me.
In immediately north and somewhat east was a large concentration of a black neighborhood there. It was called, some people called it Little Africa. Mm-hmm. It's Park Duval. And that's where a lot of this pollution went.
Mm-hmm.
That would be one of some of the closest neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's Shively, which is immediately to the east of the rubber town, is about 30% black.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the color is changing.
Mm-hmm.
The blacks first settled in the West End, and that was the nicest part of Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happened, there was an exodus to the south and went down into Pleasure Ridge and what have you, and the whites moved.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now that we don't, it's not that it's not that big of a problem. Mm-hmm. There's a mixture.
Mm-hmm.
All around. Cane Run Road is immediately east of the plants, is getting more and more color.
Mm-hmm. Do you see the pollution that the plants have produced over the years? Has, you said it mostly ended up in that that Parc Duval.
The Parc Duval sort of neighborhood
bore the brunt of it.
And they bore the brunt of it. Mm-hmm. Of it. Mm-hmm. Didn't have the political muscle to do anything about it. Mm-hmm. Then.
But now have things changed as far as?
Yes. And now we have metro. We have metro government. Mm-hmm. There is some safe black districts, and of which I am in one of the safe black districts. Mm-hmm. So if I chose to run for that council seat, first council seat, well. It would be extremely, extremely difficult mm-hmm. to get to be elected mm-hmm. because me being a Caucasian.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by safe black district? What is that?
They were set up as safe black districts when the redistricting was done. Mm-hmm. And we have safe black districts, and the biggest part of the constituency, the residents in those districts are black. Mm-hmm. And we just witnessed that over here. Mary Woolridge retained her seat over a Shively council, mm-hmm. councilwoman who ran against it, and that's one of the safe black districts.
Interesting.
And so that is a, I don't know what you could ever do about that if you ever wanted to, but really in those safe black districts, those whites are precluded.
Mm-hmm. You think it would be very difficult for a white to get elected?
Impossible. Mm-hmm. Next to impossible.
Now on the advisory council, is it a mix of
yes,
whites and blacks?
There's a mix. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
And does it seem that there are certain issues that the black members bring up, or are things jointly held or expressed?
No, there's a joint respect and not really a black-white issue. There is a little bit of that, but not too much.
Mm-hmm. I got to town a couple of weeks ago, and the day that I arrived was the day that these two lawsuits were filed, mm-hmm. these class action lawsuits. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about either both what you know about them and your opinion?
Well, the one is this was a white family that wanted their child to go to Bloom Elementary, I think.
Oh, I'm sorry, the different lawsuits. I'm talking about the...
The lawsuits against the...
The plants.
The plants.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of lawsuits here.
Yeah. That's going to be extremely, extremely difficult to prove. Some of the... in Riverside Gardens, which is... right south and southwest of the plants, the closest plant now is the old Barden Chemical Company, which is now Hexion, mm-hmm. because of a merger. There is Riverside Gardens is a little community that was established in 1926, and it was established to be a have a place for the city people to come out to on the weekends, get away from the city, and get out on the river, close to the river, and that all of the lots there are 25 feet by 100 feet wide.
Really? Wow.
Deep. Mm-hmm. And that, so there were small houses there, primarily. Now there's, you can combine some lots and,
mm-hmm. oh, okay.
and put right. another house on it. But right. that didn't really, that was known as Cane Run Road Subdivision Number 2. Cane Run Road Subdivision Number 1 was Ladd Avenue, which is right off of Lee's Lane, and a little bit east of Riverside Gardens. Riverside Gardens was, and that's where the Lee's Lane landfill is.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't, some of the, I have a few rental houses there in Riverside Gardens.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that bad, or I certainly wouldn't have them there. I mm-hmm. would not be investing my money there. So you won't see me as a part of this lawsuit.
Mm-hmm. Were you? Did people come to you to solicit your support?
No,
no.
They already knew how I felt.
Right, right.
But no, I wasn't contacted. But I would not. And there's some activists there that it's got a bunch of signs out. We want a buyout and relocation.
Mm-hmm.
Was their theme. And that is not going to happen. These Barden Chemical or Hexion now, they couldn't afford to buy all of that out
mm-hmm.
for the price that they would want.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have any plans for enlarging anyway.
Right.
Or need more land there. And if they needed more land, well, they're immediately adjacent to their plant is the 300 acres. That we talked about earlier, the old Stauffer
right.
chemical plant,
right.
plant land.
So most of the residents who have been party to those suits are from Riverside Gardens.
Riverside Gardens.
Are there Rubbertown? And then, I guess it's mostly Riverside Gardens people.
Mostly yeah. Riverside Gardens.
Okay.
There was one member of the RCAC, which is the Rubbertown Community Advisory Council, lent her name to that, and she's mm-hmm. part of that.
Mm-hmm. And who is that?
It's just, the name is escaping
okay.
me right
that's
now.
Okay, sorry. The Lake Dreamland folks, have they experienced much in the way of air pollution or other kinds of pollution?
No, other than that one leak from Stauffer.
Mm.
And the Lake Dreamland folk neighborhood now is mostly on the river side of the flood wall. We had a flood wall we built, it was in the mid-50s, and it went from downtown Louisville and it came out here and it went right down, right past the Lee's Lane landfill, and then it turned east, and it dead ends at Greenwood Road and Dixie Highway, and it had to do that because if the water got up, the tail water could just run right around the wall and back up.
Mm-hmm.
But now since then, there was the government has tied on to that where it made that bend there, and protected more and more of the county, the old Jefferson County, and goes all the way down into West Point
mm-hmm.
now. So that section of the flood wall now is not in use.
Okay, right.
When that flood wall was built, my grandfather, William, and his brother, Edward, who owned Lake Dreamland, and a lot of his land was going to be in the river,
mm-hmm.
on the riverside.
Right.
And that grandpa wanted the flood wall, and Uncle Edward Hartleach did not want it.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a little bit of falling out over that. So now what's the old Lake Dreamland? It's in the river. It's on the river side of the flood wall, mm-hmm. and it does flood once in a while. When Uncle Ed died, I think it was within 5 years from his death, well, that was going to have to be sold. And the county bought that with community development funds. And anyone that had a lease on their lot there, the county sold that to them for $1 mm-hmm. and left them there. Now, I'd have you believing that we'd have been better off to move them out. Mm-hmm. There, move them on the other side of the flood wall.
Because they're right in the flood.
Because they're in the floodplain.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that, and the lake is still there, but it's polluted. Hmm. You wouldn't dare eat any fish out of it. I can remember when the fish was good to eat there, and at one time there in Lake Dreamland, there was a nightclub called El Rancho. And that was the place to be, the nightclub in Louisville. It started out, it was originally opened as Hartledge's Barn, and that was Uncle Ed's barn. And then Buddy Regan and some of these guys that had Probus's restaurant on Cane Run Road, they bought it, and they had that was the place.
Mm-hmm. People would come out from town and...
From town would come there. The Louisville Transit, it was known as the Louisville Railway Bus Service then, mm-hmm. had service to there and would, so you could, the gals could come out on a bus and get a ride home in a new convertible.
Right.
and the very best of the cars and the newest cars, and there was a lot of convertibles then, would be there on the weekends.
Now, was this an artificial lake or a natural lake?
No, it was a built lake.
It was
the
a
first
built lake.
There was the old lake was there, and then Uncle Ed built the new lake, which is in this picture on this card.
So he developed the lake itself. Yeah.
And Lake Dreamland Road was not there mm-hmm. at that time. You had to get there from Hughes Lane, which is right here adjoining my place, or Sin Road, and you had to get down there. Now, and Uncle Ed's house was, it was the biggest and the nicest house in this community. The next one would have been at the end of Elmwood in Riverside Gardens. Mm-hmm. It's gone. Now Uncle Ed's house is still standing. I'll take you there and show it to you if you
Great.
Want to see it.
Great. So, anything else that you want to tell me about working with the plants or serving on the RCAC, other issues that you have dealt with over the years being a neighbor to these plants?
Oh, it's not a whole lot to that. Now, I just gave a little spiel to the RCAC. They asked me to tell them what it was like before the defense plants came in here, mm-hmm. in Rubber Town, and that was, I just did that at last meeting, the preceding meeting, and we meet this Thursday now.
Right.
Again.
Can you give me the condensed version of that?
Yes. Well, I went back, Uncle Ed bought his property from Miller's who before that. And the property where DuPont is and the what's Rubber Town now, it was farms, woods, mm-hmm. And there were some farms there. Out front where the plants are now, it was pretty much woods, and there was a great big ditch out there adjoining Campground Road. Down on the river, they had corn and hogs and cattle. And around here, well, everybody had had hogs, and we'd kill those hogs in the fall or winter, and ate a lot of pork. A lot of pork. Rendered the lard. Used the lard to fry with, and put it in pie crust and everything that things we won't do today.
Right. Well, that's a big process too. So would you go from farm to farm to help each other with the killing of the hogs?
Yeah. Farmer would go and would go over to this place, so we'd and had small grinders that we'd be grinding and with, and take your grinder over and help him. Help him do his, and then he'd come help you do yours when you was ready.
It's labor intensive.
We'd shot him with a 22 and scald him and did the whole thing. There was up to the north of these defense plants was Bond Brothers, which was a tie plant, and they creosoted wood for railroad tracks. And there was a little black community there, and that was just like the old coal fields. They didn't get paid. They got they had a right to go buy at the company store and get some of what they needed, but they didn't, and they really had to work there. There was a golf course that they owned down on the river, down by where National Carbide is now. It was nine hole.
Who owned the golf course?
Bond Brothers.
Oh, there was a company golf
this
course.
This was the tie plant.
Yeah.
That's no longer in existence. There was behind American Synthetic Rubber, there was a ball diamond, and they would allow us to practice there, and we had a church league that played amateur ball at Shawnee Park. And there was, it was two leagues, the Holy Name League and the Louisville Amateur Baseball Federation. And St. Denis would, we could practice there at their ballpark. So they were all right. There was a lot of people, a lot of them worked there. There was another tavern called Fats's Camp, which was right between Roman Haas plant and American Synthetic Rubber. You went down that road and it was down on the river. And he'd be open mostly on the weekends. And then there was another one up on Cane Run Road, Campground Road at Ralph Avenue, real close to DuPont's, and that was Shoop's. And that burned in the 1950s, and Roman Haas ran some fire hose from their plant to there, which is a pretty good little distance to run some fire hose, and helped them put it out with their wells. There was no city water here yet.
The
real reason that these plants, the government built these plants here, was because of the availability of the groundwater and the Ohio River. There is plenty of groundwater underneath this soil, which is good, and there was large wells put there because it takes a lot of water to process, manufacture this synthetic rubber. And when they got to pumping water, well, everyone around here ran out of water. because every house, every farm had a little, had a well, and they lowered the water table. So they had, we had to go down deeper to get water.
Do you remember that happening?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And of course at our expense.
Right.
Even though they lowered it and for a long distance they had to away. The water table was lowered so much. Now they don't have many of those wells. Not there now.
Right. Are you still on well water on this property?
I have a well here, and I have an irrigation pump that I irrigate the fields with. It's 125 feet deep. And I can pump around the clock if need be and won't run out of water.
Right.
Underneath all of this ground is sand. So when anywhere you're close to the Ohio River, that's what you will have. You'll have some topsoil on top, and you'll have a little clay, and then you'll have sand. And so this sand, this water is down in that sand, and we extract it out of this, out of there. And that sand really acts as a filter.
Right. And the sand also makes it difficult to put in septic systems. Is that right?
Well, no. In this area here, we have pits. Yeah. We'll have a septic tank and a pit. And a pit is a 4-foot diameter hole in the ground about 25 to 30 feet deep. So your sanitary wastes will go out into the septic tank, and then the water will go into this pit and go on down into the sand and dissipate. Lateral fields, which you will have if you're in a rocky area, don't work good here. But now these pits that we use here have been banned. The state has banned them. They say they were contaminating the groundwater.
Banning meaning no new ones, but you can use the old.
You can use the new ones, but the sewers are coming fast.
Right.
More and more on sewers, and city water is here.
Oh, it is now. Yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
Pretty much got everywhere here.
Right.
Now the sewers are not here, not everywhere yet.
Yeah.
And there will be some time before some of the areas get on sewers.
Well, I've taken up a lot of your time, and I appreciate you sneaking me in on such short notice to making time for me tonight. Anything else that you'd like to add or anything I didn't ask about?
In my speech to the RCAC, I talked about what it was here before the plants came. Now, when the plants came, the government zoned all of this land MR, and that's an industrial zoning then. And MR at that time meant that you had to do 50% of your business off of the river. Well, that just killed a lot of the land because these farms were not that big. They didn't go all the way to the river. So this area in here now that's not really developed, it's not zoned that way now. It's EZ1, which is an enterprise zone. Right down at the end of my road where there was a moonshine still during Prohibition, and a guy by the name of Schulte was caught, and his son-in-law, Tommy Crawford, took the rap for that and went to went to prison because they thought he was too old to go.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He took the rep, and the revenues came in and got him. There was a... let's see, I might give you some of the names of the Bank of St. Helens was the only bank around here for a long time, and that was started by Mary Biebelhauser's grandfather. He was one of four, and that's where Uncle Ed would get his money. When he'd buy up some property, and I think they would tell him maybe if someone was running had some bad luck, and he'd go over and say, well, hey, I understand you got some bad luck, and I'll help you out of your problem, and so I'll buy your land.
Mm-hmm.
And he would buy it, and the Bank of St. Helens would loan him the money.
That's how he put together all this property, right?
The some of the early ancestry here was Tarstrick, Reinstadler, Schefflein, Wessel, Hartledge, Biebelhauser, Thieneman, Hessian, Kalert, Schenck, S-C-H-E-N-C-K, Plenge, Harry Plank, we called it Plank, it was P-L-E-N-G-E, Fye, Kaufman, Slater, Burns, Bramer, Sin, Dinas, Vogt, Siebert, and Kalen. So you can see the biggest part of that is German.
Now, was there a German-American social club in
this
area?
There was a Cane Run Road Improvement Club over here, which is still in existence yet today. And that's where St. Denis held their picnics there until 1948, when it wasn't big enough anymore. That's where the dances would be, the wedding receptions would be, and it would be German music. There when that was going on.
Right. Now there's a German neighborhood within Louisville as well,
yes.
Right? And was there
yes.
much connection between this area and that German community?
Not so much. Mm. No. That was a little more east, and back then it was wasn't really roads, was
right.
non-existent, and the horse.
Right.
The horse took the produce to the market and to town.
Mm-hmm. So you really, I mean, even growing up, the city of Louisville was over there. So I mean, feel quite connected, disconnected from?
Oh yeah.
From the city.
Yeah, we were disconnected from the city.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Would go there. We would go went into Parkland, which is at 28th and Dumanil, is where we had to go to shop.
Oh boy, right.
There was a bank in there and a grocery store.
That's some distance, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, when we played ball at Shawnee Park, that was City of Louisville.
Mm-hmm. And your local, the school that you attended?
St. Denis.
St. Denis, okay.
And then I went to Flaget, F-L-A-G-E-T,
right.
Which is at 44th and River Park, which is not there anymore. And mostly because of the exodus to Pleasure Ridge, what have you.
I know the parochial schools, so many of them closed down, right?
Yes.
Right.
But there's still some around. We had Holy Cross, Bishop David and Holy Cross and St. X.
St. X, right.
And those were, had in high school, they would be segregated. Mm-hmm. The parochial schools were segregated, or separated, males and females.
Oh, right. That's right, okay. I think that pretty much covers it. Anything else that you want to add?
Hope this helps someone.
It really does help give me a sense of this history and some great stories.
Yeah.
So I appreciate it.
I'm glad to give you the time. And I did a lot of this whenever I was county commissioner. All those political science students had to interview a governmental, an office holder or governmental figure.
Right.
And I granted those all the time.
Right.
Because I knew that if I were there, I would appreciate if someone would extend me that courtesy, and mm-hmm. they needed that for to help them complete their course. And so I granted those readily.
Right. Well, that's great. So you're no stranger to having the microphone pinned to your shirt.
Oh, no.
Good. Thank you.
You're welcome.